Well, the pandemic has been bad news for many industries, as we have heard, but among the hardest hit is the higher education sector, in particular the sector which caters to overseas students. Travel bans, social distancing, casual job losses, and rising tensions with China, which we're going to look at next week, they all add up to an existential threat for universities who are reliant on international enrolments. And the threat affects the wider economy. Overseas education is now the country's third biggest export. It generates an estimated $40 billion a year, and it creates around 250,000 jobs. Now, this week, several major institutions, including Monash, UNSW and Sydney University, announced drastic cost-cutting strategies in a bid to stay alive. Can Australian universities survive this crisis, and how? I spoke a bit earlier to two guests, Margaret Gardner, who's President and Vice-Chancellor of Monash University and Deputy Chair of the Group of Eight, and David Phillips is Director of Phillips KPA. He's a leading expert on higher education management and policy and a former advisor to the Bradley Review. Professor Gardner, amongst all the other news, the damage the virus is doing to the university sector, I would argue, has got a bit lost. How much damage are we looking at?
Well, we are only seeing the beginning of the impact of this COVID pandemic and the economic effects of it on universities this year. It will be worse next year in 2021, and depending on how things proceed, in the beginning of 2021, it could be worse again in 2022. Because what people need to understand is the students we admit in first year in 2020 are our second years in 2021 and our third years in 2022. And so if the numbers go down, you end up with less and less students in the universities over the course of a number of years. It's slower to decline, but the decline is longer. And it could be deeper.
And do you think that I described it as a potential existential threat? Is that going over the top?
Existential threat might not be what I would use, but that is, it is actually the severest threat that universities in Australia have ever faced would be absolutely true. Universities are robust organisations, as we all know. They've been around for a long period of time and survived many things across the world, which is why I don't use existential. But for Australian universities, this is the worst set of circumstances they have ever faced. And the potential impact on education, the quality of our education, and on research are hard to estimate at present.
Now, Monash and other institutions we can see face huge shortfalls in income. I have to ask you this by way of clarification. Would that income have been coming only from overseas students? Is it that direct a link?
Yes, the decline in income that most of the decline in income that we are facing is the decline in number of international students and therefore the fees they pay. But there are also other declines we're facing, and they are to do with the fact that the university is shut, that we estimate that people's ability to access funding from a whole range of other sources for research, industry that's feeling the pinch, overseas sources. So there are other declines in our income, but the majority is overwhelmingly international student fees.
The government did announce a relief package of $18 billion. So does that make up some of the losses you'll see over this next little while that you're describing?
The money that the government announced is the funding that they have in the budget to pay for the domestic students we currently enrol. Monash is fully enrolled, in fact, slightly over-enrolled with domestic students. So what the government was saying was, we will pay you the money that we promised to pay you at the beginning of the year for enrolling those students and teaching them.
Okay, so it doesn't make up that component of international. All right, that's clear. Now, David, this is a pretty extraordinary diagnosis that Margaret has provided. Can the higher education sector that we recognise survive in its present form?
Well, I agree with Margaret's explanation of that. The higher education sector, as we know it, is not going to disappear. it's far more robust than that. But this is, without question, the largest shock that it's had to absorb. Without wishing to underplay the situation at all, we need to remember that international student fees comprise about 36% of the sector revenue. So if you lose half of that, you lose 18% of your revenue, which is an enormous amount. But there is still a balance of revenue available from domestic students and so on. The really significant thing, which Margaret touched on, is that it's the international student revenue which enables the universities to do many of the things which their other funding does not enable them to do. For example, universities' research funding has to be expended on the research projects that it was allocated for. It can't be repurposed, whereas the international student revenue is much more flexible and is very substantially the source of revenue for infrastructure, equipment, capital development, innovation, and research in particular. So in the short run, there will be major changes, major challenges for universities, some more than others. In the long term, the sector will survive. Some institutions may be quite significantly changed in scale and approach, but overall the sector will survive and continue to fulfil the critical mission that it does for Australia and internationally.
It's amazing listening to this. If we were discussing steel or another form of manufacturing, I do feel that there'd be red flags going off everywhere. Why haven't there been? The way you're both describing this is a dramatic change. Why has it come to this?
I was actually going to go at that one.
Yes, Mark. Yes. No, I want David to go first, please.
It's very hard to understand. I think your point is spot on. If this was happening to one of the other major export industries, coal or gas or gold, remembering that education exports are bigger than gas and gold, there would be dramatic attention, dramatic focus on this. And yet our Prime Minister has said basically that international students who can't support themselves should go home. That didn't play well in international markets, nor did it play well here in Australia. And as Margaret outlined, the package which is being provided really only guarantees the domestic student revenue that the institutions were expecting to receive anyway. Why is it like that? It's hard to understand. I think it may have something to do with the view that universities are very well off, and they are well resourced in Australia, and that they have the capacity to ride out almost any impact, and in particular, an impact to international student revenue, which in some parts of government, I fear, is seen as something additional to the core business of the institutions, which displays very poor understanding of the critical nature of the role.
Oh, so it's a sort of jettisonable value add, really, is in a way, that hasn't been able to argue for itself in the political circles. Question?
I fear that's the case.
Yeah.
And there's some evidence of that in the fact that there was no support provided to international students who were stranded in this country on their temporary visas with no work, no means of support. The only support for those students has come from the institutions themselves and in recent days from some of the state governments, but not from the federal government.
Margaret?
I want to say that if I just go back to what David said at the beginning, well, it's 36% and say you lose half of that, that's 18%. I really need to explain how integral this is and the fact that, of course, it's not evenly distributed. So we have in Australia a large number of top 100 universities. We have more top 100 universities, that is universities who are seen as the top quality in the world, than Germany, than France, than Canada, than China. Only the UK has just slightly more than us, and they're a much bigger country with more universities, and the United States, of course, which is bigger again. To get to that point, you have to actually have very high quality in all that you're doing. The government has been cutting university funding for years. So when universities win research funding in Australia, which says you're the best, because really less than 20% of people who go for research funding win any funding. Many of those grants come from the Australian government And with them comes a requirement that the university matches the funding. It's expected that you will pay the salary of the researcher. It's expected that you will pay to keep the lights on for their research and all the other things that, you know, the building is there. But it's also expected sometimes that you will match it dollar for dollar. Where do those other dollars come from? We use the dollars that come for domestic education to teach those students who are studying with us, those Australian domestic students. So this whole endeavour that we are engaged in is actually fundamentally tied up with not just a portion of income goes, it is the portion of income that keeps the whole quality of the system operating. And it is not a desirable add-on, it is fundamental, it is integral, because governments have been able to cut funding consistently over time because they have relied on us to make it up elsewhere.
But again, at a very basic level, it means that what ought to, I would have thought, be presented as a public good, and I heard that professor from Sydney University talking to Hamish McDonald on Q&A on Monday night, saying, you know, we grow the doctors, we grow the researchers, we grow the engineers, and all of that. It seems terribly self-evident, and it has not, the fact of the matter is, it has not won some form of particular approval in Canberra, and I don't know that it's just one government, I think it's more than one. So I ask you, can you help us, David, understand, is there antipathy there? What is it?
I think there is some evidence of antipathy towards the sector. Otherwise, something different would have happened in these circumstances. There would have been a stronger level of support. Where that antipathy comes from is much harder to define and identify. But I think Margaret would agree that over a long period of time, the sector has battled to get due recognition for the value that it provides to the Australian society and the economy as a whole. Just while I've got the microphone, I should have said 26% rather than 36%.
I don't think it's 36%, but I wasn't. Fine, 26%. Okay, great. I wonder if facts like the very big salaries of Australian vice-chancellors, for instance, some breathtaking salaries, dare I say, haven't helped you, Margaret Gardner. You know, I think it has, maybe it has looked bloated and self-satisfied.
Let me tell you what the efficiency of Australian universities actually looks like, top universities. We are actually engaged in international benchmarking done by an independent organisation where we can't see the names of all the universities, but they're equivalent universities across the Northern Hemisphere with the Australian ones. And I can tell you that dollar for dollar, we are actually among the most efficient in the use of our funds. The notion that we're bloated, definitely comparatively, compared to our equivalent universities in the Northern Hemisphere, and we're talking English-speaking Northern Hemisphere, UK, Canada, etc., the Australian universities, in which I include mine, are incredibly efficient and have become more efficient over time. So the notion that somehow there's a whole lot of money floating around not actually efficiently delivering services is given the lie by the benchmarkable data we have. Australian universities are very large. There is no university in the UK that is much bigger than about half the size of the one I lead. Australian universities are very large comparatively, and they are actually efficient. It's not well understood, people, and don't seem to understand the comparative data, but that is actually what the facts tell us.
Yeah, well, so so we're talking about mass higher education. You know, I've done reports over the years on this. Maybe it is a sort of, in a way, a new concept to be fully grasped, and it's not fully grasped at the check writing level. But some academics do believe, of course, that the virus provides time to rethink the role of the universities, that something has gone a little wrong here in this model that Margaret Gardner's describing, that education sometimes is accused of being seen as a product to be traded, rather than the fundamental acquisition of knowledge, you know, the old sort of raison d'etre of universities. Now, do you think, and I'll ask you both almost to sum up, do you think, David, that it's that this does provide us with an opportunity to rethink the whole role?
Probably, and that's not a bad thing, but it doesn't lead me to the view that there is something fundamentally wrong with the current approach. Certainly in conversations like this one, we focus on the economic value of international students because that's the critical issue in focus at the moment. But universities are still fundamentally about the generation of knowledge and the transfer of that knowledge. That's still overwhelmingly what they do. There are still, most of their students are, in our case, Australian students, domestic students. Yes, the universities have become very large, and as they have done so, they've become increasingly efficient, as Margaret says. So I don't think there's anything fundamentally wrong with the model which enables our universities to enrol international students, to charge them fees which provide a return to this country. So yes, let's have a focus on where to from here. Every university will have to do so because of the financial impacts. Mm. But let's not imagine that there's something fundamentally wrong with the model we've got in Australia when all of the evidence internationally points in the other direction.
And final word, Margaret Gardner, I even wonder whether in a way the culture wars, you've been caught up in that as well.
I just want to say that people need to understand that what we are here for fundamentally is education and research. Every dollar we earn, that's where it's going. When we talk about international students, talking about them as a mass, let me explain. One of our PhDs developed something that's part of the COVID response, or numbers of our PhDs. Some of them are people who grew up in Australia. Some of them are people who grew up overseas. Similarly, the staff that are teaching them, we have wonderful staff. We attract them from across the world. Some of them grew up here and were educated overseas and came back. We are educators and researchers, and that is what everything is about. Faced with this pandemic, my university and many others swung around. The engineering department redesigned ventilators. We had our materials people redoing the sort of materials that go into personal protective equipment. We had people looking at how you would do better work with mental illness, people worrying about how you combated family violence when you put people into isolation. All those researchers took all their expertise and swung around and said, what can we do to help? And that was true of the students. The students reached out. I had overseas students caught in China writing, what else can we do to help? When they felt China was coming out and Australia was going into COVID. These are people we're talking about, people who want a better education, people who want to contribute to the world through research. That's our job. That's what we do. We try to do it to the best of our ability. And people seem not to see the great advantages that we all get from this very rich, high quality education and research that we've built in Australia. Yes, things will change. We will be challenged. Nobody that I know in a university, in a leadership position or teaching or working, has ever turned away from the fact that in the end, everything we're doing is about the education and the research.
Thank you very much. Very good to talk to you both, Margaret Gardner and David Phillips. Thank you for joining Saturday Extra.
Thank you, Geraldine. Thank you.
And Margaret Gardner is a Vice-Chancellor of Monash University. David Phillips is Director of Phillips KPA and a consultant on higher education, management and policy. And lots of different views coming in. And if I have a chance, I will get to some of them, I promise you.